Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Tuesday, and it's a joyful day. You know, I was listening to Guy James earlier, and I heard the happy news. Ann Coulter's jaw has been wired shut. You know, that's like a Thanksgiving gift in its own right. You know, you gotta wonder if these right wing freaks, these hate mongers, these putrescent, excrescent purveyors of garbage from the Repiglican Party, you gotta wonder if maybe the lights are going on for any of them. You gotta wonder if maybe they're looking up at the same... Wait a minute. We prayed for God to strike Bill Clinton with a big slimy ball of lightning, and he didn't listen to us, but now our number one attack blonde... Ann Coulter's jaw's broken and her mouth's wired shut. Karma's a bitch. Ain't it? Ain't it just? Yeah, there's a sense of justice that just pervades all of that. I mean, you know, if she'd broken her ankle or something, yeah, you know, those things happen, but it's her jaw, and it's wired shut, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Ain't it? So, that's just one of those fun little things to get the show started off to a rousing giggle. You know, I remember that thing I read once upon a time. It was a little prayer. And it said, "Oh, Lord... please." Oh, what was it? Come on, Bob. "Oh, Lord, please turn the hearts of our enemies. And if you cannot turn their hearts, then turn their ankles, that we may know them by their limping." This is even better. This is just... It's like being sort of groggy, waking up and going in and splashing cold water on your face and just, shockingly wonderful. Hey, Ann Coulter, what do you think of Barack Obama? Yeah, me too. But of course, that she's not our only problem. We've got another problem. Yeah. The Ceratodactyl, Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, Godzilla from Wasilla. She's decided to seek warmer climes, shall we say. She's going to go and campaign for good old Saxby Whites Only Country Club Golf Outing Chambliss. Tell me this didn't just immediately come to your mind, too. Sarah Palin, headed for Georgia.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you. The boy said, my name's Johnny, and it
Sarah.
Might be a sin, but I'll take your bet you're going to regret, because I'm the best as ever been.
Johnny, I'm going to open up some doors, and I'm going to go right through.
Cause hell broke loose in Georgia, and the devil deals in cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold. But if you lose, the devil gets your soul.
Up his case, and he said, I'll start this show, and fire flew from his fingertips as he rolled up his bow, and he pulled the bow across the strings, and it made an evil hiss, and then a band of demons joined in, and it sounded something like this.
Devil's pretty funky, you ever notice that? Yeah, Nick Ayers, executive director of the Republican Governors Association, said it made sense for Palin to help Chambliss in the days leading into the runoff because he noted that GOP governors are still very popular in the party.
When the devil finished, Johnny said, well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough.
You know, that's no fair. The devil didn't get a vocal. Yeah, Ayers went on to say, she's going to bring a lot of energy and enthusiasm to this runoff. She's widely popular in Georgia, and I could not envision a stronger closer for Saxby in this election.
He bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. He laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best there's ever been. He played, fire on the mountain, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun.
You got to kind of hope that the sleaze factor will bite Chambliss in the butt the way it did Liddy Dole. You know what I mean? Because remember, she ran that godless ad against her opponent. And here's the Republican Party running an ad against Jim Martin saying he's soft on crime, when the man's own daughter was the victim of a kidnapping. Wow, you just can't make that stuff up. These people, these Republicans, are so tone deaf. But you just don't know what's going to happen in Georgia, because there are a lot of people down there who look at Sarah Palin and, you know, it's like that Thank You Sarah Palin ad that I ran last night and Guy James ran today. You know, where they describe her as being articulate. What? I'm still just flabbergasted by that. But yeah, this, I don't know, maybe ignorance sells in Georgia. Or at least it will up north of Atlanta and maybe down south of the Nat line. But, yeah, they've had John McCain in there, and they've had Rudy Giuliani who came in. 9/11, y'all. Yeah, Rudy Giuliani's been there. Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee has been there. And, you know, they're pulling out all the stops. Bill Clinton's been down there for Jim Martin. So has Al Gore. And Barack Obama has even voiced a part of Jim Martin's, one of his campaign ads. I wonder if she's going to call Jim Martin a socialist. You know she will. She's there Godzilla from Wasilla. She's there for what so-called red meat purposes. The question is, whose clothes will she wear?
Oh, what? This old thing? You betcha. It's mine. I found it under with the dust bunnies under the bed somewhere.
Ick. So, the we got that to start with this evening. But there's also some serious business to get into. You know, you guys, you all, y'all, yuns, got to get them all in there, yous, were all a part a couple of months back of helping to save Coal River Mountain. And thanks to the calls that you made and the emails that you sent to the office of the governor, the blasting on Coal River Mountain was forestalled for a time. We need your help again. Because, well, the election is passed, and Joe Manchin, our governor here in this state, has forgotten where he put his spine. Nick Regalado from Coal River Mountain Watch is here in studio this evening. We like hanging out during the show, things like that. And I wanted to just to get an update from Nick. Hey, Nick, welcome aboard, brother.
Well, howdy, Bob.
Well, howdy. I got up this morning and I saw these blast emails. So if I've got this right, Massey Energy ginned up, faked up, rubed up, dummied up their permit for this, and it's called the Bee Tree Permit, right? And it's on Coal River Mountain.
Correct.
And the Department of Environmental Protection won't even call them on it?
No, not really.
What gives?
Well, essentially what gives is they have the permits that they need to go ahead and start mining. They don't have their 404, which is issued by the Army Corps, which would allow them to do valley fills. But what their plan essentially is to take the burden that they have left and sort of just move it around in order for them to go ahead and start mining.
This is sickening. So they're just going to shovel a sand pile around, basically, while they go after the coal?
Essentially, yeah, that's their plan.
Do you have any personal theory why it is that Governor Manchin won't stand behind the people who live there?
Money.
Scared to death of Don Blankenship? Perhaps?
Absolutely, yeah. Political influence.
Just the mere mention of Don Blankenship's name turns his bowels to water, that kind of thing.
Sounds like you got that right in my book, yeah.
So we need your help. It's a little late in the day right now to do it, but as soon as you possibly can on the morrow, write this number down. I'll give it throughout the course of the program. Write this number down, 888-438-2731. That is a toll-free number. That is the governor's office in Charleston, West Virginia. And we need your calls. We need to absolutely flood that office. And I got a feeling a lot of calls have already been made today, right, Nick?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we put out a release.
And, you know, what's at stake here is the question of whether or not that area is just going to be killed and left for dead, or whether there is a chance of rejuvenating the region. Ultimately, the question that is presented here is whether or not, is whether the people of the Coal River Valley, and particularly the Rock Creek area, and what are some of the
Clear Fork,
sure,
Sycamore,
whether or not they stand in the same stead as the rest of America. Do they get to have a future? Now, see, with the Coal River Wind Project, that area has a future, and not just a future, but an opportunity to flourish. Blow up the mountain? Not so much. Not at all. Who am I kidding? So Joe Manchin's office number is, and there's a lovely, lovely lady who answers the phone, and just tell her very nicely that you're calling to insist. God, I'm telling you what to do, aren't I? I'm sorry. But if you wouldn't mind making the phone call, there's a lot of people that would be profoundly grateful for your action. 1-888-438-2731. And if you're so inclined, please tell them that Coal River Mountain is too important a part of America's rejuvenation and the region's restoration to allow it to just be killed by Don Blankenship and his minions. Can you do that? Do you mind? Of course, there's more information over at coalriverwind.org. Is that right, Nick?
Coalriverwind.org.
Go over and you can see the particulars of what's going on. There was a press release that went out today, as mentioned. It puts in stark relief exactly what we're facing here. The information that was within this press release. Just to share some information from it. The West Virginia DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, which at this point is an anachronism, an oxymoron, in fact. No, I'm not talking about Flush Flimble. Has approved Massey Energy's revision of a mountaintop removal coal mining permit for Coal River Mountain that will impact over 100 acres as well as a portion of the available resource for developing wind power. Because, you see, mountaintop removal is a cancer, and cancers seldom spontaneously remit. So that with this 100 acres, they will have their foot in the door, the camel's nose will be under the tent. And, you know, once the camel's nose gets under the tent, it's hard to stop the humps, too. What has the Department of Environmental Protection done in terms of protecting the environment on Coal River Mountain? Well, they've repeatedly denied citizen requests for public hearings related to the proposed demolition. And activists and members of the community are once again imploring Joe Manchin to halt the operation because, you know, he said he's got a commitment to renewable energy. He has this power, you know. Joe Manchin does. If he finds that the permit was not properly issued, which it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
He can stop it at the stroke of a pen. Of course, your mom is the redoubtable Lorella Scarborough, and she has said it's time for Governor Manchin to do the right thing for our communities. He's seen the research showing that wind is the better economic option for the Coal River Mountain, but that depends on the mountain being left intact. He knows that the mining that could begin on the mountain as early as today would immediately impact 24 megawatts of wind potential, and therefore at least two permanent jobs related to the operation of the wind farm. You see, the Joe Manchins and the Don Blankenships of this world are scared to death of the future. They are terrified of a future in which they don't have their fingers permanently embedded in the coal pie. Ew, Thanksgiving's coming. That just sounds nasty, doesn't it?
Need to wash my hands now.
but they don't have domineering, dominating control and a sickening political relationship with the wind energy companies, such that everybody can, you know, get a little what's that line in The Godfather? I just want to dip my beak. I just want to wet my beak.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, well, there's no beak wetting there yet. You know, and all this business about jobs, you know, look, the jobs that mountaintop removal brings, you know, they're temporary. They pay a little bit for a little while, and then the coal company leaves, and the poor schmucks who were working for them go, hey, what about us? And the coal bosses laugh their little coal boss laugh, and they say, ha, 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 indeed, indeed, what about you? And we get everything short of tumbleweeds. Joe Manchin, as a result of the previous campaign, got over 500 phone calls, a petition with 10,000 signatures on it, and 4,000 emails. And it worked for a while. It worked for a while because it was political season, and Yellow Belly Joe realized that doing this before his reelection campaign effort might not be the best thing for him. But the election is over, and the suckers, I mean voters, have spoken and returned him to office. And so it's okay to screw the community now. More than 30 community members who will be impacted by the mining drafted a resolution in support of the wind farm. West Virginians and people all across this country want the wind farm on Coal River Mountain because it stands as a stirring reminder that we do have a future that cannot, that we can have a future that isn't poisonous. Let's get to the bottom line. Coal is poison. And it's not just killing Appalachia. It's not just killing the hillbillies. It's killing all of us. You know, and the funny thing is that evil freak Don Blankenship almost admitted as much. He was down in Williamson, West Virginia, a dead place. You know, one of those places where the coal economy, coal's keeping the light, but the Williamson's practically dead. This is a news article written by a Julia Roberts Goad. Gotta wonder if she's kinfolk. Got Goads in my family line. But Don Blankenship, according to her writing, was speaking this past Thursday at the Tug Valley Mining Institute in Williamson. I wish you could see some of these small towns that coal has killed. It's so sad. But he said,
it is as great a pleasure for me to be criticized by the communists and the atheists of the Charleston Gazette as to be applauded by my best friends, because I know they're wrong. People are cowering away from being criticized by people that are our enemies. Would we be upset if Osama bin Laden was critical of us?
Hey, Nick. Don Blankenship just called you Osama bin Laden.
I think he called me a communist and an atheist at the same time.
I think he did. And me too. And y'all. And y'all, all of you, us, we,
a bunch of communist atheist Osama bin Ladens.
This guy is absolutely beyond any shadow of a doubt crazier than a sprayed roach. I mean, he's nuts. But for some reason or another, people listen to him.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
Yeah, ain't it the truth? But, you know, Don Blankenship needs to blow up Coal River Mountain because it's not about the money. There's lots of coal being taken off the mountains by Massey and the rest of the coal mafia. But Coal River Mountain is special. Coal River Mountain is a Morgul knife in the heart of an attempt to birth the future. Because once Coal River Mountain's gone, so is most of the wind potential of that region. Because they've killed all the other mountains,
oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely. You can write southern West Virginia off the map.
And I don't know what that does to you, but that just makes me all kinds of sick. It truly, truly does. And so this, and so he's out there spouting this evil nonsense about how you and I, because we actually want a place for our families to live, how we're communists. Isn't that just mind-boggling? It is to me. So, you know, God, this guy's as crazy as General Jack D. Ripper.
I cannot let the communist conspiracy and the Reds taint my precious bodily fluids. They can say what they want about climate change, he said. But the only thing melting in this country that matters is our financial system and our economy.
Yeah, he really said that. He really said that the only thing that matters is money.
The only thing that matters to me is my money.
I mean, this guy, he can't even find male or female, anybody who wants to spend their life with him. That is how obnoxious and revolting he is. No kidding.
Now, the business community doesn't want to lose any skin.
Because he just told him a story about how he got skin knees when he was a little creep playing football.
Being scratched up is not so bad, but the political elite are so comfortable that they think their mission in life now is to save the world.
God forbid.
Yeah, I guess he kind of missed out on that whole Matthew chapter 25. If you've done it under the least of these, you've done it all. Oh, Don, you're going to roast, buddy. You're going to fry.
Did you get a chance to catch him on Decision Makers, the Brett Kerr show?
Oh, yeah, that was a beautiful thing.
That was precious. I loved when he asked him if he believed in global warming. Don Blankenship said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yep. I don't believe in it. It's not man-made.
Yeah, see, but that's the thing. That's where people like Brett Kerr play into the mindset. Because if you ask somebody if they believe in global warming, well, it's, you know, do you believe in the Tooth Fairy? Do you believe in Tinkerbell? Do you believe in Santa Claus? And at that point in time, you know, by asking someone how they, you know, what they believe, what you've told them is, it's okay for you not to think about this. You can just use your ignorant, stupid, bigoted feelings. Feelings. Well, no, I'm not going to do that. So, because the question is, it's not, do you believe in global warming? It is, do you realize what a damn mess we're in with what we've already done to the planet? This isn't a subject for belief. This is, I mean, this is reality. This is our reality. And it's my kid's future that this murderous, mercenary, bloodthirsty, soulless, godless, fascist bastard wants to take out and kill. And I'm not supposed to get a little upset about that? Oh, but you, me, us, we're greeniacs. Greeniacs. God, it sounds like one of the characters on that bad old Superman cartoon. Brainiac want pants.
Environmental wackos.
Yeah, thanks, Flush Limbaugh.
In dealing with mountaintop removal, I don't consider myself an environmentalist first and foremost. You know, it's just as much a social issue as it is.
Sure, it's self-preservation.
Issue. Absolutely.
Blankenship went on and said,
how many times have the people in this room heard at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or at the National Mining Association, I don't believe in climate change, but I'm afraid to say that because it's a political reality. The greeniacs are taking over the world.
Never mind the scientific reality.
Bingo!
Science is in, Don. You know, the numbers are there. You want to look at them?
La 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 la. Don't believe, I don't believe, I don't believe.
Don't matter what you believe. Doesn't matter at all. These are facts. He says,
politicians occasionally trip over the truth, but they get up and go on as if nothing happened.
And then, and this is a beautiful thing, and feel free to, like, you know, tear at your clothing or your hair or whatever, Nick, because I've already done my bit for the day.
The amount of pollution produced by American coal is negligible compared to the environmental damage done by other countries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, the Dutch are out there just ruining it for the rest of us.
Yeah, you know. That makes it okay, doesn't it, Don?
The Italians? Total pollution pigs. Germans? Absolutely. Ruining it for the rest of us.
You know, he mentioned China, talking about China being such a huge polluter, but it's funny how he brings that up because it's only been a little over 6 months since China surpassed the U.S. in terms of being the largest polluter in the world.
And they still don't consume nearly, you know what, we've got 5% of the world's population and we consume 25% of the world's resources. China can't say that, and you can't say that about China. But he said, it's nonsensical. It's idiotic. And yet we call it two different sides, partisan, Democrat, or Republican. I think this guy dropped acid before he went to talk. If Pelosi thinks that decreasing CO2 in this country is going to save the polar bears, she's crazy. If CO2 emissions are going to kill the polar bears, it's going to happen. What we do here in the U.S. is not going to it.
Yeah,
because all our CO2 stops at the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other thing. I talk about the total environment. Yes, we need to breathe clean air and have fresh water in the streams. We need to have trees and all that. But we need to be able to send out children to school. That's total environment. And the walls are melting, and the ceiling just turned all paisley. Oh, really, dude, they're breathing. The walls are breathing.
Oh, I wish he'd elaborate.
Snakes!
I wish he'd elaborate on the connection between coal and the school system there, because, you know, there's some lines to be drawn, some dots to be connected. Please, Don, enlighten us to what you mean by that.
Most people wouldn't believe that coal is the most important thing to the environment.
Huh?
And then this business about, well, it's all China's fault.
Last I checked, more than 50% of the coal that Massey pulls out of the ground goes where?
To China.
Bueller.
It's China's problem. We're selling it to them.
Hey,
it's their problem.
The first one's free. After that, you gotta pay.
Coal produces electricity, he argued, and that improves the quality of life.
Anywhere you go, low-cost electricity, the creation of energy, of jobs, of an economy, ultimately leads to an improvement in the environment. There is no place in the world that has a good environment where people live on $2 a day with no electricity.
Yeah, the entire North American continent that had more human beings in it than the entire European continent in 1491, bad environment. Bad environment. Temperate rainforests, abundant food.
How'd those people survive, you know?
Well, they didn't have a good environment because they didn't have $2 a day.
Yeah.
What is this, 40 acres and a mule? God almighty. Oh, wait. But it gets better.
If you really believe,
Miss Goad, I don't know what you meant there, but if you are really believe that the world is going to over... Or maybe that's how
that's
he talks.
That's a direct quote.
Yeah, it is a quote. Maybe this is how he talks.
If you are really believe that the world's going to overheat from the use of carbon, then whatever you do in the United States to reduce carbon emissions is wrong. Because all that it'll do is increase CO2 emissions in China. So,
Why is that, Don? Again, because you're supplying China's coal, and Australia is supplying China's coal, and China loses 10,000 human beings a year digging their own coal. Amazing. All the things the environmentalists told us were important, sulfur and particulates, everything they've talked about and badgered this industry about. Poor little coal industry.
Oh, yeah.
It's been badgered by the big, bad, mean environmentalists. Badgered, badgered, badgered. Badgered this industry about are still being polluted throughout most of the world without any controls. So, it's not worth working on.
Controls.
Just give up. Yeah. Surrender, Dorothy. It's not only important for the greeniacs and the environmentalists to change their views, but there's also a real need for business people to change their views. We have to challenge everything, and we need to get more bold. When business people act like politicians instead of expressing what the truth is, we'll have people making decisions on what they call political reality. I'd love to have been in this room. I didn't get the invite. Did you get the invite, Nick?
Missed that memo.
And this, here's a... Jimmy Carter understood that there was a risk if we increased our dependence on foreign oil. I think this is the first time I've ever heard a right-winger say the name Jimmy Carter without spitting on the ground. But did it not sound similar to Obama? Turn down your thermostats, buy a smaller car, conserve? I've spent quite a bit of time in Russia and China, and that's the first stage. Wait, this is good. Everybody sit down, okay? Grab something and hang on to it. You go, I think he's been hanging out with Godzilla from Wasilla. You go buy a smaller car, conserve. I've spent quite a bit of time in Russia and China, and that's first stage. You go from having your own car to carpooling, to riding the bus, to mass transit. You eventually get to where you're walking. You go from your own apartment and bathroom to sharing kitchens with four families. That's what socialism and the elimination of capitalism and free enterprise is all about. Really? That's it? Funny. I thought socialism was about providing needed services to the people, like clean drinking water, clean air. Wouldn't it be nice to actually have a mass transit system, Nick? I mean, wouldn't that just be fun?
Man. You know, the wonders that public transportation does for, you know, many places.
Or have you know, meaningful communities. So Don Blankenship just said that everybody that has a mass transit system is on the slippery slope to being full-on little cap-wearing, Mao's little red book-reading commies. Sounds to me like he's the one that wants a cultural revolution, because wasn't it a few paragraphs up where he said... the greeniacs and environmentalists have to change their views. Well, I guess, Nick, I reckon you and me and everybody at Cold River Mountain Watch and everybody listening to this program, we just need to get trucked off to Don Blankenship's Massey Energy Reeducation Camp.
If you ride the bus, you're going to find yourself in the line down at the local soup kitchen.
You're riding the bus. Why do you hate America? Lord, I hate this man. I can't tell you how much I despise this man. Oh, yeah. Thanks, John Fox. Here. It's a little... we may have to adopt this over for dear Don Blankenstein. Blankenswine.
We'll be right back.
pure genius from Horn Chief Engineer and host of All Foxed Up, John Fox, I Am a Maggot, and God, isn't Don Blankenship, I mean, just really. Look at this. You know, there you go, 5 years old, and you share a bite of your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and the next thing you know, you're a commie. And you're going to love this line. You know, because every now and then, the curtain gets pulled aside, and we see what they really, really think of the rest of America, these corporate thugs.
Massey's working hard to come up with sound bites or what sort of messages might resonate publicly.
Again, this is a direct quote. Either Julia Goat is just still working on the art of word knowing, or he actually talks that way.
Massey's working hard to come up with sound bites or what sort of messages might resonate publicly. Unless we get people to think positively about coal, we're in trouble not only as an industry, but also as a country.
That's right. We have to, you know, in 1954 they added under God to the Pledge of Allegiance, and I guess here in 2008 Don Blankenswine wants to add under God with coal, or under God with liberty and justice and toxic coal-related deaths for all. How's that? How's that for a pledge? You betcha. Dawn Channel.
It doesn't take a genius to figure...
We're in trouble as a country. Remember, that's where we were. Trouble also as a country.
It doesn't take a genius to figure out that if you have that much energy in the ground, you shouldn't have thousands of troops in Iraq Oh, my God! Don Blankenswine's a peacenik now! Shouldn't have thousands of troops in Iraq spending $10 billion a month. You shouldn't be trying to patrol the world. Let the world fight over the oil. Liquefy the coal.
But what do we drink then, Don? You dumbass? Honest to God, what's he got? Some crappy little accounting degree from Marshall University or something like that? Don? I tell you what, we'll liquefy the coal when you show us what happens every morning when you get up and bathe and cook with and shower in and do your laundry in and consume and drink lots of coal slurry. Because that's what's left over from liquefying the coal. You start out with 3 to 8 gallons of really nice, fresh, clean, potable water, and you run it through the liquid coal process, and it comes out the other end coal slurry. And you can't clean it up, and you can't make it un-coal. You can't unslurry it. While we hear a lot about carbon capture, we haven't heard anything about deslurification. How's that for a word?
Well, we're deslurrying the water.
What are you going to drink, Don? I mean, granted, the earth will not weep when you're foul, pustulant, bilious self shuffles off this mortal coil and goes to wherever bad, defective sociopathic souls go. The world will not weep. The only people that'll come to your funeral, Don Blankenswine, are the people who have to. Just like your sad, slavish, freakish little employees have to wear what they're told to wear when to wear it. Just like they have to work like you mean it. Just like those poor souls in the Aracoma mine had to work in an environment that you and your filthy company have admitted was part and parcel of their death.
Well, you know,
did you catch this, Nick? Did you catch the comment on the Hop Along show? This is the right winger that's all over West Virginia radio. Talking about Massey got sued, and they recently settled when it became more and more apparent what a drubbing they were going to take from the jury. They settled in the middle of the trial. And he said,
well, that process worked for 10 of the miners, and 3 of them it didn't work for them, and I don't know why. Maybe they didn't know how to work their respirators.
It was a horrible situation. I wrote a letter to the editor over a lot of that coverage, and it was sickening because they admittedly said there were 25 violations that attributed to that fire, and the settlement Don Blankenship said was fair by West Virginia standards,
right.
Not by other standards, but by West Virginia standards. And it burned me to my core, Bob, because I was thinking, what does he mean by that? What does he mean by that? What does he mean it's fair by West Virginia standards? That implies to me that he's saying it's okay for the industry to keep giving West Virginia the short end of the stick, no matter what the circumstances.
Well, not just that, but it's a good thing too, Nick, because it's a recognition on the part of Don Blankenswine that, lo and behold, justice is coming to West Virginia, because there were 6 or 12 West Virginians tried and true sitting on that jury hearing the damning evidence, and they knew their goose was cooked. Because when a jury starts acting in such a way as that your lawyer, and it was like 4 lawyers against one. The widows and the orphans that Don Blankenship created, they had one lawyer. Massey had a lawyer. Blankenswine had a lawyer. Another organization had a lawyer. Lawyer.
They always have a team.
Yeah, an army, against one. It's kind of like trying to find liberals in the for-profit media. If you ever see a roundtable, there will be, 6 dead from the neck up conservatives and, one pitiful. Well, look at Hannity and Combs. You get the idea. Well, it was like that. But even against those kinds of odds, Massey's lawyers walked over to the judge somewhere during, day 2, day 3 of the trial and said, Your Honor, could we talk about settling this thing before the jury gets any paper and pens in their hands and writes down a 1 and starts adding zeros behind it, please? So because Blankenswine thinks that anybody who is allowed to get into the courts and sue somebody for doing evil is somehow personally abusing him, because dumbass Don Blankenswine hasn't figured out yet that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. And so he realizing, boys, I think you better. They're gonna ring us like bells on Christmas. And so they wrote the check, and of course the terms were not disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
But when he said by West Virginia standards, they were gonna ring him up.
Oh yeah.
And he thinks he would have had a better shot in some, maybe in federal court or some other country, maybe getting it tried in the Iraq, anywhere. But the thing is, West Virginia citizens, Nick, we're figuring out, the light is coming on, we're realizing how badly we've been screwed.
Oh, yeah. It so deeply offended me. I come from a long line of coal miners, and to hear someone say that, basically come off with the stance that, they're pleased with the settlement because it was reasonable for what they consider okay for the people of West Virginia.
Yeah.
Sickening. It's disgusting.
But that's the slave culture that we, you've got coal miners in your past, so do I. Going way back. David Anstead identified the coal seams in this region in the 1880s. And it wasn't much longer before that. And I gotta take you a walk down the rail trail one of these days. It'll blow your mind. Wasn't much longer after that than they were digging coal for all they were worth here, and people dropping dead. The Farmington mine disaster anniversary passed this weekend. And it was a reminder. I saw the reporting in the Charleston Gazette on it. It was a reminder that it's in the nature of the coal industry not to give a tinker's damn about the people that work for them. One lone physician went on a personal crusade to just get people to acknowledge black lung. And see, that's the thing. What? Oh, okay. We got to go. Okay. That's the thing, though. Just like we were talking about him being a global warming denier. It's the same thing with black lung. They denied it, they denied it, they denied it, they denied it. One man, one doctor in West Virginia, stayed on a personal crusade until he got black lung recognized as a real disease. And it got so bad that even the UMWA rank-and-file membership had to rebel against its own leader, union leadership. They went on a wildcat strike to get black lung recognized and to get mine safety regulations put in place. They struck not only, they didn't just strike against the coal companies, they struck against their own union. And that's the kind of stuff that West Virginians are made out of, Nick.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And all we got to do is find that within ourselves again, and we can, you know, we can bring change. We can bring hope to this state. You know, because the mountain that that Massey destroys in Raleigh and Boone County, you know, they don't stop there. Like I said earlier, cancer never stops growing.
You know, you can't put a price on loss. Those people are gone forever, and the industry owes it to those people to pay them what is fair by all standards.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's worth noting that this is not the first time that freaks like Blankenswein have screamed that there's no such thing as global warming. They screamed that there was no such thing as black lung, too. And way back when Union Carbide was digging the Hawk's Nest Tunnel and people were dropping like flies, they said that there was nothing wrong with breathing silica rock dust. I mean, can you believe it? The coal companies, I don't know if you know this, Nick. I don't know if y'all know this either. The coal companies used to argue that breathing coal dust was good for coal miners because it staved off pneumonia.
That's good for you. Yeah, very good for you. Breathes more coal dust. You haven't had pneumonia lately, have you? Well, it's the coal dust.
So, that's where we are. That's what we've got to, that's the fight. We've got to fight morons like Blankenswein and quotes like, what's it?
Coal has to be important. We have to stand up for coal and for energy independence.
Well, I'm with him on one of those. I'm all for energy independence.
Oh, yeah.
But see, the reason that a sick, cancerous freak like Don Blankenswein hates wind power and solar is that he can't own the sun.
That's right.
He can't make a buck off the wind.
And that's what they're truly afraid of, Bob, is the fact that, you know, people are going to wake up and realize, you know, every day that they look out their window and see, hey, the sun is shining. It's, you know, a renewable resource. It's an infinite source of energy and power. You know, there's no way to drive up, you know, the market up and down on that, man, because, you know, it's going to be there.
Yeah. Oh, you mean Wall Street can't panic the sun or the wind?
Well, you know, it's a totally different ball game, and they don't have a card in it. They don't have any chips in
it. No,
that game.
They don't. And that's what energy independence means. Energy independence isn't destroying an entire region of the country. So some moron can keep 3 refrigerators, 2 freezers, 5 computers, and 3 televisions going 24/7. That ain't energy independence. That is, what? That's predatory, pestilent, parasitic behavior. And frankly, as your mom is so fond of saying, and, you know, she really went to the, not fond of saying, but it's just a moment of genius. As your mom notes, we don't live where they mine coal. They mine coal where we live.
Absolutely.
And I don't owe a damn thing, not a blessed thing, to anybody that's out there wasting electricity so that my home, the foundations of my home, can be splintered by blasting on nearby mountains.
That's right, man. The true cost of what it takes.
I mean, what? Honest to God, Before coal ever came to West Virginia, this place, you know, we sure make fun of the hillbillies, but you know what the hillbillies were doing? They were making their own sorghums, so they had their sweet. They were raising their own grain, wheat, barley, oats, rye. They were raising their own cattle and horses. We seem to forget that there was a life in this country before electricity, and especially in West Virginia, we seem to forget that there was a life before coal. You know, those previous generations we were talking about a couple of minutes ago, Nick, and I've mentioned on the show before, I can take you out the road, and I can show you the gravestones of people from a century and a half ago when the national average lifespan was 47 years. I can show you headstones of people out here in the country who were living into their 90s.
No, definitely.
And they worked like mad. But you know what?
They were rugged pioneers.
They were. And they had courage. And they were self-sufficient and self-sustaining. The self-sufficiency of the Appalachian peoples was only taken away when somebody found out that their coal was under our ground. And that's, you know, that's one of the missions, is bringing this region back to life, the honorable history of this region.
And that's truly where Coal River Mountain comes into play in terms of being the front line for, you know, the future of the past, man. You know, trying to move forward because the fact of the matter is West Virginia needs green jobs and we have the potential for it. You know, I read somewhere that someone said that no other state in the nation has the identity complex that West Virginia has with coal. And, you know, one of the things I really worry about is the fact that that identity complex, that there's some truth in that, that is going to allow us, when we could be a leader in renewable energy, when we could, you know, make that happen for ourselves and move forward as the rest of the world moves forward with renewable energy and green jobs, that, you know, us thinking that coal equals West Virginia is only going to leave us behind in terms of progress and development as the rest of the nation moves on.
Well, yeah. And the fact of the matter is, we really are at a crossroads, aren't we?
Absolutely.
If it can't happen here, then the chance for a meaningful strategy that gets us away from... See, and that's the thing. Energy independence is getting away not just from oil and not just from foreign oil. You know what? Saudi or Persian Gulf oil accounts for maybe less than 15% of our imported oil. You know, those nasty the foreigners that produce the oil. That you know who those foreigners are, for the most part? It's not some Saudi sheik. It's Canada and Mexico. And, yes, Venezuela. But, again, what kind of national hubris do we engage when we say that we have the right to destroy people's lives in other countries? Because, you know, it's not like they're just joyfully playing hockey and producing oil in Canada. What's coming from up there does a tremendous amount of environmental damage. What happens in Venezuela does. What happens in Mexico does. And somehow or another, as a people whose initial founding document speaks of the right of all peoples, not just people in the colonies, but of all people's rights to pursue to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, us blowing up the rest of the world to run those 2 refrigerators, 3 freezers, 5 televisions, and 2 computers 24/7. Rather makes us a bit of a hypocrite now, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's do your part, please. Please do your part. Tomorrow, sometime, if you don't mind, please pick up the phone and dial 1-888-438-2731. 1-888-438-2731. Joe Manchin has it within his power, if he will only find it within his mind and his soul, to understand that West Virginia can transition away from the torment to which we have been subjected for over 100 years now. But it's going to take you to help him find that place. Because he lives in persistent, bowel-watering fear of thugs like Don Blankenship. And make no mistake, Don Blankenship is a thug. This is a guy who threatens to shoot reporters, okay? I don't just call him a thug because I don't like him. He's a thug because he behaves thuggishly. Joe Manchin has to have the backing and the courage that you'll provide him to stand up to a thug like Don Blankenship and say, no, you're not going to get away with this. Not now. Not ever. And then to get behind this project. What was it? Co-op USA? Was that the name of the...
Co-op America.
Co-op America. Recently gave the Coal River Wind Project its top honor, its top accolade. What specifically was that, Nick?
It was the Building and Trades Award, I think.
Okay. Praising, heaping praise upon the Coal River Wind Project for the vision that it shows and for the potential that it displays to move away from antediluvian, backward, dead from the neck up, energy policy, and into the possible future that can create something viable for generations down the road.
And the recognition and titles and awards get lost on me because I'm just, you know, until we get the windmills on the mountain, man, the work's not done, you know what I mean?
Well, exactly. And that's the only way to go about it. So that's where we are for the first hour of the program. You are free to join in if you so wish. The toll-free number, and we're happy to pay the freight, is 877-443-2366. And the direct dial, if you want to save us a nickel or a buck, or you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance calling plan, is 304-658-3333. This is The Horn.
Now they make new movies in old black and white. The happy endings where nobody fights. So if you find yourself in that nostalgic rage, honey, jump right up and show your age. I wish I had a pencil and mustache. The Boston Blackie kind. Two-tone Ricky Ricardo. Now they make new movies in old black and white, with happy endings where nobody fights. So if you find yourself in that nostalgic rage, honey, jump right up and show your age. I wish I had a pencil and mustache, the Boston Blackie kind, two-tone Ricky Ricardo jacket, and an autographed picture of Andy Devine. I remember being buck-tooth and skinny, writing fan letters, disguised me as Penny. Oh, I wish I had a pencil and mustache,
don't cut my hair. But I can go to movies and see it all there, just the way that it used to be. That's why I wish I had a pencil thin mustache, the Boston Blackie kind, a two-tone Ricky Ricardo jacket, and an autographed picture of Andy Devine. Oh, I could be anyone I wanted to be. Maybe Sway, Earl Flynn, or the Sheik of Araby. If I only had a pencil thin mustache, then I could do some cruising too. Yeah, Brill Cream, a little dab, I'll do you.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Welcome to Seat Notes. I'm Tony Seaton with bits and pieces from this reporter's notebook. Two prescient comments from columnists on bailing out the automakers. Tom Friedman asked, "What are we supposed to do with auto executives who fly to Washington in three separate jets, ask for a taxpayer bailout, and offer no detailed plan for their own transformation?" And Gail Collins noted, "The heads of America's great car-making corporations are so dim that they couldn't even survive hearings run by members of Congress who actually wanted to help them." It took them a week, but Nebraska has rewritten their law allowing parents to drop off unwanted children to limit the age of the droppees to 30 days. Several dozen preteens and teens, a number from out of state, were left at Nebraska hospitals by their parents in September. A 36-member commission set up by the FAA came to the conclusion that all anyone could do about passengers being stuck on the tarmac for hours is that they should be notified of their circumstances every 15 minutes. The commission was comprised of airline and airport executives. A French appeals court has ruled that a marriage can't be annulled just because a husband presumed incorrectly that his bride was a virgin. The case involved two Muslims, and the initial ruling in favor of the groom was deplored across much of the civilized world. Finally, Dan Rather's suit against CBS is going forward, and in the course of the court procedures, it has come to light that the once honorable network made a point of finding prominent Republicans to investigate Rather's alleged misdeeds. Even though Rather's source was questionable, the story was true, but CBS refused to air it. And that's Seat Notes. For more, go to SeatonNotes.com. I'm Tony Seaton.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty. About 14 minutes past the hour. Hour number two continues apace. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333 is the regular number. And you can reach me via email, bob@headonradio.com. And I tell you what, let's go straight to the phones. Hate to keep people waiting. And let's see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good, good. This is Parson Brown with the Topless America Project.
Well, hey, Parson Brown, good to hear from you, brother.
Yeah, how you doing, man?
I'm getting along, I reckon. It's a little frustrating. We're worried a little bit about the mountain, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, that's what we're doing up here, too, worrying about the mountains. And I don't know, I was listening to you, and I was thinking about stuff, and I did give a call to Joe Manchin's office today and sort of got the runaround and talked to about five different people before I was presented his official comment, which today his official comment on the Coal River Mountain situation is that he is not taking sides.
And that... What?
He's not, as far as the blasting in Coal River Mountain and his comment on the Coal River Wind Project and how the mountaintop removal would affect the possibilities for wind power, he's not choosing sides. And to me, that just seemed like, in this situation, not choosing a side, not taking any action is taking action, and not choosing a side is clearly showing that he has already picked his side, because he is the one who has been put in the position that can stop it, that can make the change.
Well, exactly. You know, you remind me of that great line from the Rush song, Free Will.
Mm-hmm.
If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there's an old maxim out there in the law book somewhere that says silence is acceptance.
Exactly. And that's just sort of the feeling that I got when I was talking with the representatives from his office today. You know, by not taking a side, you know, technically that is his side. He's already chosen. And that was really disappointing to me.
Well, it is incredibly disappointing, but also sadly par for the course. And that's, you know, that's where citizen action like what you did comes in, because it's only by putting the great weight of public opinion behind him that Joe Manchin is not a leader. Okay, he's a bit of a ham-fisted autocrat, but a leader he is not, and he will not lead. He will have to be pushed or dragged, kicking and screaming, into the 21st century. Because that's the thing, Parson Brown. These people are all engaged in old, worn-out, tired, dirty thinking. They can't imagine a world that's powered without destroying somebody else's life and livelihood and the community and culture.
And what's so sad about that is that they are in a position where they could be a part of a transition. You know, we can all, as individuals, laymen, little folks, we can be a part of it. But Joe Manchin, Don Blankenship, those are men who are in a position where they could lead a revolution in this country as far as energy and transferring to renewables. They're in the position where they could make it happen, and instead they're profiting on this old school, old process that is killing people.
And they don't, and see, that's the thing. That's, you know, that's where the denial comes in. They can say that it's not killing people, but, you know, simply gainsaying a statement does not constitute rational argument. And it is killing
right.
people, and it's provable. Parson Brown, let me ask you, tell folks a little bit about the Topless America Project.
Oh, the Topless America Project is a documentary, started out as just a documentary film project and now is an organization through Columbia College Chicago, where our primary goal is to spread awareness of mountaintop removal issues, primarily in Appalachia, and we also, our secondary mission is to document the movement against mountaintop removal.
Well, how did it come into being?
I didn't know anything about mountaintop removal. I'm originally from Northern Virginia, Front Royal, Virginia. Grew up in the mountains and moved to Chicago to go to school and was literally just sitting around with a couple of friends when someone pulled up the YouTube video on iLoveMountains.org, that little video on there.
Sure.
And I was awestruck because I did not realize that was how we were getting our energy, and that was for such a small amount of coal that we actually use is coming from mountaintop removal that all that devastation is taking place. And so first and foremost, to see a mountain getting blown up, I was irate. And then once we became more involved, we learned that it's more than just blowing up a mountain. It's oppressing a community. It's holding our entire country in the past.
It is.
And so we've been traveling as much as we can for over 2 years now. We've been in West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee. We go every year to Washington, D.C., which they'll be doing again this year. The Alliance for Appalachia does their Mountaintop Removal Lobby Week, where we lobby for the Clean Water Protection Act. And documenting as much as we can the whole time. And so that's what Topless America is. That's what we do up here.
Well, that's brilliant work, and I really commend you in taking an interest in it, because you know this is where the change is coming from. The heroic folks from Coal River Mountain Watch and the other organizations that are battling it here on the home front, we'll keep fighting. You know, we're not going to stop. We're not going to go away. But we also recognize that we've got to have folks like you, and we've got to have projects like Topless America that are out there realizing that what happens here spreads outward with a ripple effect to places like Chicago, and you know Southern
right.
Illinois. Southern Illinois got coal, and as a matter of fact, our good friend Jeff Biggers, the author of The United States of Appalachia, who is such a vocal opponent of mountaintop removal and such an erudite one as well, he hails from Southern Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows firsthand. His old family place that he would love to be able to see again is gone forever because it was destroyed by strip mining.
And see, I just could never imagine that growing up in the mountains. And you know, I moved to Chicago because I wanted to study film, and there's simply not a whole lot of film schools down in Virginia where I'm from. But I love and miss my home so much. And to think of having my, you know, that home place and that heritage just ripped out from underneath of me and destroyed, it's too much. It hurts me so much to see how much the people of West Virginia and Kentucky and Tennessee are suffering. You know, just having their heritage and their land ripped out from underneath them. And I think that we really need to take these issues to the main stage. We've got to get it out of Appalachia. Appalachia is aware now, and it's starting to become more prevalent. You know, people are hearing more and more about it bit by bit in other states. But we need to put mountaintop removal, clean water protection, and coal, and not clean coal, the truth about coal. We need to put that on America's center stage. We need to make that known to all. We need to express the connection between Americans and their electricity.
Absolutely. Well, just like vegetables don't come from a steel can, and hamburger doesn't come from the grocery store.
Yeah. We've got to have a new form of consciousness for everyone.
And I think we're on the way, because as loony and hateful as the man is, in those words of Don Blankenship that I read a little bit ago, Parson Brown, you know what I saw more than anything else? You know what I read? I read fear. That man knows his days are numbered. He knows we're winning. He knows that the patience and the passion that have been put into this and that have succeeded, not nearly as much as we would like, but it has succeeded in getting the issue out, getting it to places that never think about the Appalachian Mountains. He knows that we're building a groundswell that is going to ruin his world. And by his world, I mean that world that's made up of the same high explosives that Timothy McVeigh used to blow up the Murrah Federal Building that he uses on our mountains. We're going to ruin his world. And I don't have one compunction against doing that.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that sort of goes back to what I mentioned earlier, which is he's in a position where he could be part of a positive change. He's in that position, and yet he's decided not to accept his opportunity to help our country and to help the world move into a renewable, cleaner energy era. He's decided not to do that.
Yeah, no, he wants to be part of the problem. And yeah. you're gonna have those people, but I think about it may be an odd analogy, but I think about the strategy that the United States used in the South Pacific in the Second World War. There were some places that we just didn't want to go and fight, so we just isolated them and went around them and starved them out, and that eventually is what we have a chance to do. You know, I don't know. Did you see Jeff Bigger's article earlier today from Grist?
No, I didn't see it today.
He has put out an article actively calling for Al Gore to come to Appalachia and see this and make this the primary focus of his efforts. And you know, I think Jeff Bigger's is right, because if we can do a lot of things. We can make, and there are a lot of important efforts to make, but if at the end of the day we haven't addressed the fundamental torture and torment and sickness of coal, then everything else is window dressing, isn't it?
Right. Well, I think as much effort and as much hype is going into, especially with our new administration, you know, into this clean coal. Everyone's talking about it, even politicians, when we go to lobby and when we go to one-on-one talk with senators and congressmen. They are telling us that they're working towards a green future and that they're looking into clean coal technology. And first and foremost, things like that need to just be eliminated. We need to have them. We invite everyone that we talk to come down to Appalachia with us, because we need to let everyone understand that it's the extraction process there's nothing clean about that. There will never be something clean about mountaintop removal and the coal that comes from that and that whole process. So clean coal is alive, and that's something that we need to stop pressing and pushing around and having all of our political figures promote as well, because it's not clean. Coal is not clean.
Be clean. and that's so easy for us to comprehend, but... But, you know, part of this heroic effort, you know, we make part of this effort with one foot in the bucket because, for instance, you know, there are websites that I love to go to, and I'm not gooning on the websites because they have no control over it. But, you know, Huffington Post or Democratic Underground and a lot of other so-called liberal sites, you can't click on a thread or a story without being hit in the face with a clean coal means energy independence for America.
Yeah.
And until we're in a position, first of all, those are Google ads, Parson Brown. Okay? Those are Google ads. These are the don't do evil people. These are the people who say that they've got that G is greater than E, that green is greater than or greater than coal or whatever it is campaign going on, and these are the people who are actively, you know, actively taking the money of people like the fiends of coal to assault us with their propaganda. And so, you know, this transition you've mentioned and this change that you've mentioned, there's a moral component, there's an ethical component, and there's a commercial component too. You just got an email note in from our buddy David in Tennessee. He referenced your statement, be part of the transition. And what David said is, yes, but we should never, ever simply say transition in relation to this again. We must begin immediately to say profitable, job-creating transition.
Because that's got a point.
That's really what it is. The study that came out from Duke University a couple of days ago that was produced by a partnership between the Environmental Defense Fund and the AFL-CIO. That points the way toward the future, and it shows that a green economy and green jobs can literally transform this nation in ways that we may not be able to fully contemplate. Because the demolition crews, you know, what, 14 people? How many people, Nick Regalado, how many people has it taken to blow up Cayford Mountain?
Oh, yeah, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 16. You know, it's not many at all.
And that's how many square miles?
It's a lot, man. And, you know, it changes all the time, so.
Sure. But, you know, something that I assume you've seen Cayford Mountain, Parson Brown?
I've seen Cayford Mountain. I've talked to Larry Gibson several times. Terrible situation.
Yeah, and you know, when you step out there at what Larry calls Hell's Gate, you see a scene that's just mind-boggling. And literally, a buzzard flying across has to pack a lunch. It's so dead. So, you know, and that was done by 12 guys. Where are all these good jobs that coal brings to West Virginia?
Right. It's interesting that there's still the argument, you know, from those working for the coal company. And nothing against people who are just trying to hold on to their jobs, but realistically, mountaintop removal has eliminated so many traditional mining jobs in the first place. And I just always thought that was really sort of interesting and sort of in a humorous and a very dark, twisted way. But, you know, what we do, we need to diversify the economies in Appalachia anyway. We can't have them dominated by giant corporations that are, you know, oppressing everybody down there. And we also need to work as a nation to build this green economy.
Well, exactly. And, you know, if Appalachia has always been the heart and soul of everything that was good about this country. It's literally the incubator of our form of government, of our ideas of democracy, of our ideas of freedom. And frankly, for 100 years, it's been where America's energy has come from, and we can still be.
Yeah. Well, I was try fighting a revolutionary war or a civil war without the Appalachians. You know, it's not going to happen.
No, and you know, we can be America's energy future as well, because we've got mountain peaks as the Coal River Wind Project has demonstrated plainly. We have mountain peaks that can. Just the Coal River Wind Project alone, what is it, 150,000 homes it can power?
280,000, yeah.
280,000.
That's, you know.
That's one mountain. Now, imagine that we did more with that, and you get an idea of the legitimate, the legitimately beneficial force that this region can be. But only, right. but only once we have created the weight of opposition and the weight of forward progress, the momentum, that's the word I'm looking for, the momentum that comes from organizations like yours bringing awareness to people, who wouldn't otherwise think about it. So.
Yeah, it's what we've got to do. It's what we've all got to keep trying to do. Spread it out. It's tough. It's tough to work in nonprofit when there's a economic crisis as it is, but everything you can do, like for me, whenever I even fly just to go home and see my mom, I put my Stop Mountaintop Removal button on and I wear it on the plane. And anyone who asks me, and lots of people do, every single one of them, one by one, I take the time to explain what's going on and send them in the right direction to get more information. That's what we all have to take responsibility to do, things like that.
Absolutely. When I was wandering, I felt like some sort of a missionary when I was wandering around on the New River Gorge Bridge last month, just stopping people when they would look over at the mountain that's on the state quarter and said, you know, just to get an eyeful, take a couple of pictures, probably won't be there next year.
Yeah.
and let it become visceral and very, very real for these people, because it has to be.
Yeah, there was a quote of Larry Gibson said something to the effect of, someone asked him why he, if he had a picture of Caford Mountain, that area, before the mountaintop removal, and he said something to the effect of, well, why the hell would I take a picture of a mountain? It's going to be there forever. And that sort of struck me, because now we're actually at a point in our history where you better take a picture of those mountains, because you never know what the hell is going to happen.
Exactly. And if you, on the main network website, Parson Brown, the headonradionetwork.com, if you go there and you click on photo gallery, you can see a couple of the photos we hung up of, actually ELO hung up. I just sent them along. She did the real work. But a couple of photos of what's going on here close to my home. That's literally, you know, you get the state quarter. That's the mountain in the background on the state quarter, and it's astonishing. And by the way, you might get a giggle out of this. Apparently, state officials are not at all happy that we have co-opted the back of the official state quarter of West Virginia to use it as a tactic to point out the depredations of mountaintop removal. So, you know, when we get under their skin, we know that we're winning, and we're way under their skin. And it's thanks to efforts like yours. So, let me know, by the way, next time you're down this way. I'd love to get together, have a cup of coffee, something that, well, decaf for me, but, hang out for a little bit.
Yeah, sure, absolutely, Bob. I really appreciate you picking up the phone.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you for picking up yours, Parson Brown. And give my best to everybody at the organization there. And, by the way, that little widget you've got on the site where you can – see how much and where from all the coal donations for your elected representative is one of the handiest tools I've ever run across.
Yeah, well, that's from the good people at Appalachian Voices. I can't take credit for that. That's Appalachian Voices, and they're at appvoices.org or ilovemountains.org. You can get all kinds of cool stuff from them.
Exactly. Well, I wouldn't have seen it had I not gone to the website. So thanks again. And have a great evening, and say hi to everybody for me.
You too. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Bye now. That's our buddy Parson Brown from Topless America, the Topless America Project, toplessamerica.org. Can you imagine what their web traffic looks like?
Oh, I'm sure it's wild.
but that's a great theme. It's a great way of describing it and drawing people to the project and to the concept and to the issue.
Brilliant name.
It is. It is indeed. And, and out there and in Chicago, you know, in Chicago, when they, and we win, we are going to win, and we know we're going to win, because we know that the folks in Chicago are getting the issue out, because we network and we cross pollinate with organizations like the one, in Arizona, that I read about recently, that's struggling to save, land there. From again the depredations of coal, when we create that momentum that inertial force, and it gets outside of the hills in a big way, that's what makes Don Blankenship scream and squeal, because he sees his world dying. And the thing is, it's okay for Don Blankenship's world to die, because it's a cancerous world, a poisonous world, a toxic world, a filthy world that is based on the deliberate elimination of entire communities and cultures. And that has no place in 21st century America. It is the chaff that has to be separated from the wheat. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Well, I was just kind of thinking back on last time we talked, you know?
Yeah.
I was thinking about something you said, something you said, you know?
Mm-hmm.
About how are you going to celebrate this Thanksgiving Day? And that kind of made me have to just reach down and wonder. And I thought, a tradition.
Yeah, it would, and that's pretty much that's the direction we're going in.
Yeah. I want to roast the Palin. with all the trimmings, Bob. I want all the trimmings. I want to stuff that turkey, and I want to roast it till it's nice and brown on the outside, tender on the inside, and just oozing with all kinds of goodies. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I want a traditional turkey day. I want to roast these turkeys. I'm tired. Oh, Bob, I am so tired. My friend, I am so tired of the raping and the pillaging and the murder of this planet that these Republicans, Repuglicans, these Sarah Palins, these George W. Bushes, these all of these just neocon, neo-fascist creeps have done to us all. So let us all celebrate by roasting us a Palin and stuffing us a Bush, a Palin, a turkey, a Bush, a turkey. You know, you get the picture, right?
I do indeed.
Just enjoy with those that love you and that you love, please enjoy that turkey because you're eating it and turning it into what it was when it first came into office. And now it's coming out of orifice. Okay? I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. You're working the metaphor pretty hard, but I get it.
Yeah, it's coming out as something useful to Mother Earth, and she can turn it into something we, the people, need, okay? Fertilizer. And that's what we need to turn this Republican, like whatever the nightmare that they keep throwing out at us, okay, we're taking $700 billion for this. Okay, $20 billion goes here, $200 billion goes there. Who cares, Bob? Do you realize what that really is that they're talking about?
It's too vast a number for me to get my head around.
Yeah, but Bob, do you know what fiat currency is?
Yeah, it's phony baloney money. Money not backed.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that when I was a kid, we had this Monopoly game, okay?
Yeah. Well,
little pink notes, little pink pictured notes, and they had all kinds of funny faces on them, you know, Daffy Duck and Goosey Goose and all that kind of stuff, right? But that's all it is, Bob. We are getting ourselves all in a tizzy when all we've got is a nation that has been rendered unconscious by its own, what do you want to call it, Bob? What do you want to call it?
You pick.
Not ignorance, but willful ignorance. We, the people, are willfully ignorant because we don't want to know about our history. We don't want to know about what brought us to this point that we're at. We don't even want to know who's in charge, Bob. We don't even ask ourselves, okay, I am going to enjoy this Thanksgiving more than I have.
This is the first, this is the first Thanksgiving when I've had something to give thanks about.
Yes, I am very thankful that Barack Obama is our president. You know why? Not because of his choices of his select few that are going to help him maybe select a few people that have enough intelligence to maybe drag us out of this mess. But no, let us give thanks that we've got Bob Kincaid, the head on radio network, Commander-in-Chief. I'll call you that from now on. Okay, you're the Commander-in-Chief.
Oh, my God, I'm the CIC.
You have stood fought harder than any man that I know. That's in, what do you call this, radio network stuff, or whatever you're doing. But you were honest from the beginning, Bob. And now, maybe, I don't know Barack Obama. I have no idea about his politics. But I know this. I know this. I have lived with men of another nationality than I, other ethnicity than I, and slept in the same mud and muck they slept in and fought side by side with them to survive. And the one thing that I learned, that when we are all in the muck, we're all down in that muddy mess, there's only one thing that matters, and that's you, Bob, and the other guy, that Mexican, or maybe he's not Hispanic, maybe he's black, maybe he's Asian, maybe he's something other than that, pasty-faced white guy that is sitting in the middle there trying to figure out, how could I use these guys? No. There is no them and us. It's just us. There is no them or us. It's us, the human race. And guess what? We are multicolored. I loved when I saw Jesse Jackson, crying when he saw the first Afro-American, he's not quite Afro-American. I mean, he's not really, truly, just purely. He's the first human being to be selected. And I mean selected by the people, not selected by the elite. In that office, since maybe John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Could be.
And guess what? JFK was an Irish Catholic. That's almost like being one of them N-words, okay? That's the way they treated the Irish Catholics back in that day, Bob.
Sure.
And when John Fitzgerald Kennedy took that office, he tried to put together the most intelligent people he could find at that time to help him with that office. And, of course, he was also an insider, which Barack Obama is not. And maybe he is a corporatist, which everybody says he is, but I don't see it. I really don't. He may be a little bit smarter than Bob Kincaid and Bob Bassett, okay?
Yeah, that's a lot smarter than Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, and maybe he has some kind of an agenda that we don't even know. But I'll guarantee you this, it's not the Bush agenda. It's not the right-wing agenda. It's not the neocon agenda. It's not the Karl Rove agenda. It is not what we have had for the last long 8 years, Bob. It's something new. And, yeah, we're a little bit afraid. But let's not be timid, okay? Let us just boldly and thankfully, and I am very thankful, this Thanksgiving, that I have a new president and a better man than I could have chosen, but I did vote for him because he wasn't my first choice, but he is our better choice, and I'll give him that. Let us go forward into 2009 with hope for change, and that's all he ever gave us. Hope for change. He didn't give us absolute...
Well, exactly, Bob, because, and that's the argument that I've made so often. this isn't, nothing is solved yet. Nothing is fixed. This is just all we've got is a puncher's chance now.
But, Bob, we got that. We got that puncher's chance, and we have hope. And I hope, and I would say I would pray, but I'm not a praying man because I'm not asking for anything. I'm not giving anything other than what I am and who I am to this network. I'm giving you my gut feeling, my heartfelt feeling that this is it. This guy, he's not a stupid man.
Nope.
He's not a George Bush. He's not a Dick Cheney. He's not an evil man or a stupid man. He is an honest man, Bob. And maybe he is the honest Abe of this, what do you call it, the 21st century we're in now? Maybe he is the honest Abe of the 21st century. He's not perfect, but by golly, I'm happy that we got him. And not McCain and Palin, because I'm going to roast me a Palin come Thanksgiving, because I'm going to cook me a turkey.
Baste it well, Brother Bob. Baste it well.
Oh, hey, Mama's already, okay, she's already got that in the plans. Boy, we are going to enjoy this Thanksgiving.
Well, I'm downright proud of myself. We've got the bird thawing, and I think it'll be real good and ready to go and doing it up Brian style, and it should be one tasty bird.
All right, my friend. And hey, people realize that, hey, whatever you hear on the mainstream media, it is just the death throes of the Republican Party, and it's time to be liberal and love your neighbor. No, don't be afraid of him because he's brown. Hey, he might be the president of the United States. welcome him into your club, you know, kind of, hey, come on, hey, let's play golf.
Well, exactly. Bob, you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving meal out there. We'll be thinking of you up there on the high plains.
Hey, we're here and we're queer, okay?
All right.
Oh, deer. Oh, did I say that I shot a deer? No, I didn't shoot it. It wasn't a deer. It was a queer deer. Bob, understand what I'm saying?
I do, Bob. And give our best to Glenda and the whole family, please.
It is done, and to you and yours, and to everyone in this precious time, we cannot fight each other. Just hey, look at it this way. Tomorrow, hey, we don't know what's coming, but by golly, it's better than what we have.
And that is plenty to be thankful for, having the chance, getting a chance, getting out from behind the eight ball. Bob, take care, brother.
Breathe. What is that they say? With relief, because we have that, you know. Think about what they went through in the Depression, the Dust Bowl, the 20s, the Roaring 20s, the Dirty 30s, and through that, think about our forebears, our mothers, our fathers, our grandparents, and think about what they went through. And Bob, we haven't seen what they saw. We have not even one idea of what they went through. But we know this. They gave us their genes. Their strength came from them. Those people. And I'm not talking about those people that, you know, that the Republicans talk about. But those union organizers that, you know, they were black. They were white. They were red. They were yellow. They were human beings that stood and fought together to build something, Bob. And they built one beautiful nation that was divided by what? Propaganda. And anyway, my friend, get on with the show and show them what you got.
We're a goner, Bob. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you much, and great Thanksgiving. Not happy, but great Thanksgiving to you and to this earth.
Here, here. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Bob with some sincerely good advice. It's coming up about 6 minutes before the hour. One more hour of the program left to go. Jump in if you want to. can't resist bringing this up. This is talking about whacking somebody with a turkey. This is too good just to leave alone. Apparently, creepy human being was trying to carjack a vehicle away from a lady in a community south of Raleigh, North Carolina. And people came to her rescue and came to her aid. One of them, you know, when you go to the frozen food section, you know, there's that little netting, that plastic netting that surrounds the turkey that comes to a handle at the top. Well, one of the people that came to this lady's rescue took the handle of that turkey and swung it as hard as he could and got upside the head of the attacker with that big old hard, like I said, these are geologic hardness scales for frozen turkeys, and just whacked the daylights out of the guy. He got away with the car. The cops chased him down. And at this point, he's got head injuries. I've just got this vision of a mad berserker wading into battle with two frozen turkeys in, with a frozen turkey in either hand just laying about him. Turkeys can get revenge. Turkeys can mete out justice. And good on the good Samaritan who stepped in and whacked Fred Lewis Irvin of Raleigh. He just knocked off a gas station, then ran across the street to a Harris Teeter store and started beating on Irene Mormon Bailey in an attempt to steal her car. God, you know that turkey had to hurt. Proud of them. Proud of the rescuers. So that pretty much completes completes the second hour of tonight's program. Your thoughts continue to be welcome, encouraged, and invited. So you know the phone number. Make use of it. And in talking with Parson Brown, I mentioned a lyric to a song of which I'm rather fond. And so we'll go with that. Thanks to John Fox for sending it along, and another tune we'll play here in a little bit. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn, and we will be right back.
tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy, and we're going straightway to the phones. A little piece of information for you, just the same before we go to the phones. Your non-surprising news story of the evening. A member of the Bush administration, former Bush aide, has been charged with stealing how much? Yeah, $500,000 in federal grants. They were these were monies that were going to an organization called the Center for a Free Cuba. And Felipe Sixto decided to help himself to $500,000. You know, $500,000 here, $500,000 there. So, yeah, your utterly non-surprising news story for the evening. The Bush administration are thieves. I know. I know. Like, why did I bother? Who's surprised? Exactly. So we will go straightway to the phones and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita. How are you?
I'm fine. I wanted to thank Bob for what he said. The other Bob that just
yes.
called.
Yeah, it can get confusing,
can't
it?
It was really wonderful. And it something could be played over and over again, I think.
I think you're right. There's a lot of, well, you know, Bob's in the truth business.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and about everything comes out of his mouth has a lot of truth.
And I don't know about the Sarah Palin for a turkey, though. I think that's sort of an insult to turkeys.
No, I think I'd get mad moose disease or something. Yeah.
But, you know, as a Christian, I feel like God has given us a second chance, and we do have somebody that's very smart. I feel like, you know, he had another talk today on TV and presenting some other things about finances, and I thought, this is somebody that's a doer, you know, somebody that's a thinker, and we've just been starved for that. Our like kind of people, you know.
I know, and well, you know, the right wingers and the religion industry fundamentalist creepies. Let's see, they prayed for God to kill Justice John Paul Stevens. They've prayed, for, you know, they declared that God, you know, God was going after the gay people with Katrina, you know, and all this evil that they've done with their prayers. And then Barack Obama's not even in power, and all of a sudden Ann Coulter's got a broken jaw and her mouth's wired shut.
I wonder if that's true.
Yes.
What, is somebody soccer?
I don't, you know, she wears those impossibly high the heels.
Skirts.
Maybe she fell
and
off
the
of them. Yeah.
Maybe so. I've always, you know, thought she's always, I don't know. Never mind.
No, but yeah, but she's so wickedly thin. I imagine her. She's probably got the bone density of a saltine cracker.
Well, you know, I had never really seen how thin she was. I'd seen her a lot on Bill Maher's show, but she was on Jay Leno's show one night, and when she turned around, I mean, she just don't have no bottom or nothing. She's just like a stick, like you said. She is so thin.
Yeah.
I mean,
disturbingly
whatever.
So, yes.
But, I mean, and she wears those really short skirts. But,
I don't even like
you know,
the metal image will give me nightmares. Wanting to take
okay.
it easy on me, okay?
You sound like, Guy James is. That it makes him nauseated.
Oh, just hearing her voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's enough to put me off my kibble.
But I really, you know, it's almost Thanksgiving. Day after tomorrow is Thanksgiving. And, you know, I think it's probably one of our best holidays.
All in all, it is my favorite because it's a holiday that places a premium on family connections and cherishing and loving those we love best, and being and you know, giving thanks, you know, even for folks who aren't in aren't religiously turned, there's certainly nothing wrong with giving thanks to the members of your family for being there for you, for being a part of your existence. And so far, with a few exceptions, they haven't managed to figure out a way to make it a completely tarted up, prostituted out commercial enterprise.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
The day after Thanksgiving is another story entirely, however.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just, on the day after Thanksgiving, Juanita, I just cave up and don't go. I don't leave the house the day after Thanksgiving. Just sit around and let the turkey tryptophan hangover wear off. Eat turkey sandwiches. Hope that there's a little bit of dressing left.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can, and you know, I can't wait to make the dressing. Oh, how I love it.
Well, and the thing too, you're talking about those who believe, if you don't mind me saying this, I've come to believe that an ingratitude is one of our biggest sins and causes all the others, because it took me years to learn to be grateful because I didn't know how. And it makes a big difference, you know, to, like, now, I don't have my parents, I don't have a big family, you know, that we're my I have a lot of cousins, we're not close, and even if you are, you know, you just don't see them, you know. I've got my son, and that's great. But at this time of my life, I'm not in, you know, the best of health, but I'm not in the worst of health either. I used to have a lot worse debilitating things, you know, because I didn't know how to view life. But this is the happiest time of my life. I mean, it would be a lot happier if I had my parents, you know. But
sure,
it's the happiest time of my life. And I don't condemn anybody, you know, because I used to live every day thinking of suicide. And I realized that life was my greatest gift from God. And I have said, God, help me to be thankful for my life. And I really feel that he answered it, because I did change and appreciated that I was alive.
That is, and, those are beautiful words, Juanita, and a lot to think on, because that's part of what I do about this time every year. Is I start thinking about Thanksgiving's past, and
yeah.
You know, the recipe and pretty much everything that we put on the table is stuff that I learned from my parents.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I make the dressing the way my mother made the dressing, and the gravy the way Mom made the gravy. And, you know, we've tinkered with the turkey recipe, but it's still largely the same.
Uh-huh.
And it's a way of connecting with the ones who aren't physically with you. They may not physically be with you, but you keep them alive in your heart.
Well, I sort of believe it says there's a cloud of bright witnesses around us, and who knows, it maybe it's them.
I know. I see my parents in my dreams a lot.
You know, I have you ever, like, wanted something to eat and you didn't know what it was?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. And it came to me sometime in the past year that what it was I wanted some of my mother's cooking. You know, because even if you make it the same way they do, it just isn't the same.
Yep. Yep. Indeed. Indeed.
And every time I feel that way now, I realize, well, I want some of my mama's cooking and I'm not going to get it, but you know.
I know. But you can try to come close. But it's still not the same.
I'm a pretty good cook. I have been a cook too.
I bet you are. I mean, I can't bake biscuits worth a hoot.
You can't what?
I can't bake biscuits worth a hoot. I'm no good at biscuits at all.
Well, I haven't really baked a lot in a while since I was working, but I was real good, and I came up with a lot of different recipes. I had made all kind of biscuits. I put all kind of things in them. Have you ever had cheese biscuits?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I just can't make them. There's a lot of things I can make, but I cannot bake a biscuit worth 10 cents. It's pathetic. But apart from that, you know, I'm going to bake the bread for the dressing and the cornbread for the dressing. And, you know, because there's so many of us, it's going to have to be this monumental pot of dressing.
It's not going to have sugar in it, is it?
Oh, sugar? No, no.
That's my cornbread. I don't like sugar in it.
No, Kate reminded us the other night.
I heard that the other night about it.
If cornbread was supposed to have sugar in it, God would have called it cake.
Right. Because it just don't go good with your fried okra and all that.
No. What? And I found a great quote the other day from a man by the name of Will Cuppy, who said, "I go along and I start thinking pretty well of my fellow human beings, and then I meet somebody who puts sugar on sliced tomatoes, and it ruins it."
Oh, no.
There are crimes and there are crimes, Juanita.
I know.
Sugar on a sliced tomato. Ruin all that beautiful, tangy wonderfulness? No, can't do it. Can't hack it. Juanita, have yourself a wonderful night, and I hope we'll hear from you before Thanksgiving.
Hear from me again. You have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and everybody on the people that call in are wonderful. I love hearing from all of them. And thank you, Bob, again, for Big Bob, for the message you gave to all of us.
Well, thank you, Juanita.
A good reminder.
Indeed. You take care, and I hope you have a wonderful feast.
Thank you.
All right, and bye
now. You too. Bye-bye.
Our pal Juanita in Florida. I bet you. Oh, don't you? I bet you she can make some biscuits. Mm-hmm. And some cornbread. All the good things. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed.
How's it going?
It's going. I'm happy it is.
Yep. Well, sounds. I love to hear that lady talk. She's right down to earth, and I like her views on her standard of living and what she believes. Just wanted to compliment her on that. But I give you a tip on a biscuit.
Okay.
I can't make them like they do at Biscuit World. But have you ever tried drop biscuits?
Yes, I have.
And you couldn't do no good with
that. No, I can do okay with drop biscuits. I'm talking about those fluffy, wonderful things that my mother used to make, and yeah, cat or what are called in some corners of the world cat heads. Can't do them.
Yeah. Well, I have my problems there too. They turn out the same way coming out as they went in, flat and ugly. So I don't.
Well, for some reason, mine always come out kind of like pie crust. They're dry and they're not flaky or wonderful or nothing, none of that. Ugh.
Well, mine is, that's what I'm talking about. Mine goes in flat and all together, and it's the way they come out. Maybe somebody listening knows what they're doing can tell us how to make a biscuit right.
Well, I know the person who is just pretty well near the exalted biscuit status is in the chat room right now, and that's Nanette.
Well, and you should get on the air and tell us biscuit lovers how to improve on it. Now, my wife is not a very, and she's not home or wouldn't say it.
I was going to say, you watch your mouth. Yeah.
But she makes good rolls, except when she fixes those burnt offerings. But she's real good at making the rolls and stuff. We had a Thanksgiving day before yesterday, because son-in-law's mother's coming in, and when they come in, we sort of give the holidays to them because they live in the D.C. area, and it sort of crowds up at their place.
Yeah.
So we just, we have whatever holiday they come in, we have it early. So we'll have two Thanksgiving, and this one will be sort of small. You know, we'll probably go out and get a chicken or something like that. But I wanted to tell you on gas.
Yes.
Give you a report on gas. Where I went to Salem, Virginia, Friday. Gas down there at one place I stopped was $1.63, and if you paid cash, it was 7 cents off a gallon, which made it $1.56. And I went through Fuel City, Virginia. I don't know how to pronounce that city. Some call it Rapine, and some call it Rapine and all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it was $1.66 there. So it shows you what a ripoff this, and you know, that these four distributors are doing here. And that's the reason there is talk of forming a informational picket line and picketing each one of them for 10 days to see if they can drink their gas. I think I mentioned that to you before.
Yeah.
And then hit the next one for 10 days until they come off of this stuff. And a lot of people think, well, our taxes are high. That ain't got nothing to do with when the price of oil was $58. Gas was in the $1.70s, and now it's $50.88 a barrel. I think that's why. I know it was $50. I can't remember the odd pennies, and it's still up where it is. And you know, I was told to be careful, that you might aggravate them and they move it up. I got a notion to buy me one of these tanks that you put oil in,
mm-hmm.
and take it down and get it filled up in Virginia. Take my trailer and hook it up and just leave it sit right on the trailer and get me a couple hundred gallons, or well, really more than that.
That would be tempting. I don't know how good I'd feel about transporting it, but it'd be mighty tempting.
Yeah. Well,
what's the CB lingo for a suicide jockey?
I don't know. You tell me. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Maybe that's somebody who hauls high explosives. But gasoline qualifies as one.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what they'd do about it if they found out just hauling that much.
Oh, I think they'd probably put you under the jail, Ed.
Well, I think I'll pass then. I was seriously thinking about getting about 30 gallons on a trip, you know.
Yeah.
And but I don't know if I'll do that or not.
Well, it's one thing. I mean, you know, get a bunch of gas cans.
Yeah. Well, I do that.
Oh, do you really?
I always get me 10 or 15 gallons. But, you know something? I have nothing for West Virginia and the merchants, and I guess mainly the merchants that put up this stuff. And, Bob, you know how they work it? If you would go and put an independent gas station up, they would charge you the same price for gas that you would have to come up and charge whatever the other ones do to make up the, you know, make it equal, or they would put you out of business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look down there toward Huntington, Ed. Right across the Big Sandy River sits that great big monumental Ashland oil refinery. And, you'd think, because people are, well, you know, it's the transport costs. Well, the gas prices in Huntington, West Virginia aren't exactly giving, they ain't giving it away.
Well, gas ought to be back down then to $1.70s right now. If it would go back to where it would equal what it did, you know, when it started up.
Yeah.
But, I know there's four distributors that distribute the gas in and around all these areas here. And one woman calls a shot on them. You know, she's the speaker for them.
Yeah.
But I still say after the weather breaks, if this thing don't break, then we ought to start thinking about forming, you know, especially the retired union guys, and we could get a councilman in Beckley to, an ex-cop too, to help us, you know, and start that thing in Beckley and let it spread. See if we couldn't pick it up and shake them up anyway.
Yeah, see, I'm looking in the chat room here right now, Ed, and I guess over in Ohio it's $1.71 a gallon. And, you know, what we're still paying $2.08, $2.09?
Last I saw, I haven't filled my truck up in 2 months now. I'm going to have to because...
Yeah, my vehicle has forgotten what it feels like to be full.
Yeah, well, I just kept on waiting on it to go down and ain't going nowhere, and I don't have any reason to go anywhere. Golf courses are closed, you know, because of the weather, so...
Yeah, and you don't get much bounce on a frozen, snow-covered golf course either. Kind of makes the course, it makes it play long.
Stings your hand when you hit into the ground, too.
Yeah, right smart.
Yeah. But I want to comment on Ann Coulter, too.
Yeah.
You know what? I would like to tell her to her face that that's the best thing for the public that's ever happened, is having her mouth shut. Well, no matter how you got it shut, as long as it's shut. And her size.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind at all if them wires had corroded and seized up and, you know, they had to use the jaws of life to get her.
I'd like to have to take my cutting torch and get them apart.
Oops, I think we singed her.
I'm serious. I don't have any compassion whatsoever for a person like her, and talking about her size is a whole lot bigger than what her brain is, you know, in comparison to other people. So she's a lame brainy, and they got one on television here that CNN handles, Buchanan.
Bay Buchanan. Yeah, she's an idiot.
How come you can tell those people before they talk? And for sure, after they talk, you know.
Well, yeah, Ed, the crazy little Glenn Beck is, don't you?
Yeah, I know what station he's on, but I never listened.
Well,
to him.
That dummy's on the radio calling for states to secede from the union. Didn't we have a little dust up between 1860 and 1865 on that idea?
Well, and look what happened.
I know.
I tell you, he is a, you know, him and Sanchez, I can't believe CNN has got people like that on there. They might as well go ahead and bring old Bill, or whatever his name is, on their daily, what is his name, the one that comes on about 11 o'clock?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I'm not sure at all.
Well, he's as bad as any of them,
I'm sitting here looking at the quote from Glenn Beck, Ed. He says, so the question is, do states have the right to secede anymore? Well, I thought we fought, really, the Civil War over the principle of secession. No, you can't. And he says, do you have the right to do that as a state anymore? Do you have the right to say, you know what, you guys are going down a path that I don't even agree with. Is that even possible?
No, but they're allowed to succeed from it.
Lord,
you
I
know,
think
he is.
Glenn Beck has seceded from sanity, Ed.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say they got a place for him, and that they call it the insane asylum.
Yeah, just give him a straight jacket and put a purple crayon between his toes and let him go to writing on the walls.
Well, him and who's this other guy that went? I can't think of his name either right now, Bob, but... They get on there and swing their arms at Sanchez. I don't know whether they're trying to get into the acting business or what with all that commotion they go through. They don't know how to handle a talk show. You know, I mean, they just absolutely, and what they do is a long way from the news. And if they didn't make Sanchez sticks somewhere close to the news, but then he would be a wild man. And he's borderline anyway.
He's looking toward that day, I think.
Yeah. Well, what is going to be the ultimate on the bailouts, Bob?
I don't know. I don't think anything happens till Obama gets in office. And by the way, I'm glad you brought that up, Ed, because sometimes I wonder if people are listening and just not, you know, you never know who's listening because, what was it? Was it a week ago? Maybe you and I were talking about the auto bailout, and I said, you know, what's the, you know, the difference between Wall Street and Detroit's bailout is the fact that, the Republicans love Wall Street because there's no unions. And that they want this final chance to just utterly destroy the United Auto Workers by letting Detroit die. And lo and behold, I turn around and I find that commentator Bill Press has said practically word for word what I did. It's kind of inspiring once in a while because he said, should banks and financial institutions get the entire $700 billion while automakers most likely get not a penny of federal assistance? And then he says, for Republicans, we know the answer. Because Wall Street is non-union, but Detroit is all union. Because Wall Street is white-collar and Detroit is blue-collar. Because Wall Street is upper-class and Detroit is middle-class. And Republicans would rather swallow glass than help a middle-class blue-collar union member.
Well, not it'd be one thing just to not be for them, but they are, you know, by their actions of using our tax dollar to help them export their jobs overseas or wherever they take them, they're not only not for them, they are absolutely, they've turned their back on them. And you know what it reminds me of is people, is the preachers talking against unions when it's the high-paying middle class that pays their salary. You know, you're talking about idiots. That they're all those kind of people are in the same category. They talk about the very hand that feeds them. That's reason, Bob, I don't have anything, and I hope I'm not being offensive to Juanita, but I wouldn't give, I don't know, but one church I would give anything to. And I give it to people that need it more. We give our tithe money, but it's to people that need it. And I will tell you about that sometime.
Okay. Well, you know, this list of what could potentially happen with Detroit going belly up, just being allowed to die, as opposed to just fixing it. Bill Press notes, he said, George Bush will kill 3 to 5 million more jobs, cause 775,000 retirees to lose their pensions, and force 2 million workers to lose their health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you think the economy's bad now? Imagine how much worse it will be when U.S. automakers go belly up, wiping out 20% of all retail sales in America, eliminating 1 out of 10 American jobs, and destroying what little is left of America's manufacturing sector. That's pretty heady stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I really have mixed emotions on that because, you know, I was an auto worker, a different segment. I worked in a different department than what the auto, where they make the automobiles, but still belong to the union. And I really have mixed emotions on this. I don't want to see those guys lose this stuff. But I still believe that somebody, they're not going to let the auto industry die in this country. I just believe that it'll be picked up by somebody. It may be on a lot lighter scale. It may cost the union worker in the short run. But I get about half sick when I think about seeing that bunch of vultures get around that table with their hand out, and like we talked before, flying those jets in like you did, and spending $20,000 on fuel when they could have took a regular airline in. I just they, you talking about, now, you know, I hear this term's out of touch, but that is the ultimate in being out of touch. How can anybody pull a trick like that? You know, come with their cup out and having that kind of, I don't know what that would compare with. I don't know. I have no idea how to put it in words, how disgusting that is. And that's, a lot of people would not be against that bailout if they didn't see that the leaders was the same way today, even with the experience factor under their belt that they've had, and still doing the same thing with the same attitude and with that concept of our living style in relation to what the condition of the country's in.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. I think my feelings probably expressed a lot of people the way they do feel about them. And they, you know, there is no way that a worker out in the plant could do a stinking lousy job like they've done and hold their job. There is no way.
No. And yet the right wing's out there saying, well, you know, it was the union that killed Detroit. All you got to do is get rid of the unions and then and Detroit will be fine. And frankly, if we did that, then maybe the Republicans would be a little more amenable to the bailout. But they see a chance here right now, Ed, to kill organized labor dead.
They've done a real good job already.
Yeah, but they want to finish it. Because yeah. the last place that Detroit's one of the last places where, you know, the unions have a strong and somewhat vibrant presence.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they do that, they've taken out one of the first building blocks that the union started with.
Yeah, exactly.
And the mine workers.
Exactly.
So
I don't know. I want to see something done, but I don't trust George Bush to get it right.
Well,
if there's some way to have, you know, and frankly, I don't believe that, you know, wow, you know, we're going to die tomorrow. I don't buy into that. Let's take a little bit of time to work through this with some real brains and take it out of the hands of the Bush administration, because dadgum, you know, they're crooks and thieves in the first place, Ed.
Well, yeah, and just some of what you said before proves when that guy stole the $500,000. Why, if they sat down and added up what the people in the Bush administration,
that's petty larceny is what that is.
Yeah, that's not even good grievance material. But
no, he wasn't showing any initiative just stealing $500,000.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why he didn't get a bag full. You know, what was there?
I know.
Anyway, I just want to compliment Juanita, and I hope she gets to feeling better. She talked like she'd been feeling pretty rough. I always like these two ladies comes on there. I like to listen to their opinions. They're real good.
Well, I tell you what, that's the charm and the blessing of this operation is the ideas that we all get exposed to, and I know she's listening, and she'll be tickled to hear from you, Ed. And I won't say anything. I won't say anything to Dreama next time I see her about burnt offerings or.
Who said that?
I don't know. Some guy.
I would say it was her brother.
Okay. Yeah, that works. That works.
Bob, talk to you later.
All right, want me to put you back on hold, Ed?
Sure.
All right, stand by. Here in Fayette County, our buddy Ed. And rolling right along. Hey, welcome. Ah, darn it. Well, you'll have that sort of thing from time to time. A little news story that just came my way during the course of the program. If you have little ones or little grandchildren or anything, you really probably ought to rethink how they are eating, especially if they're still on a bottle or otherwise not on breast milk. An Associated Press story. Traces of the industrial chemical melamine have been detected in samples of top-selling U.S. infant formula. But federal regulators insist the products are safe. These are, of course, Bush administration federal regulators. The Food and Drug Administration said last month it was unable to identify any melamine exposure level as safe for infants, but a top official said it would be a dangerous overreaction for parents to stop feeding infant formula to babies who depend on it. The levels that we are detecting are extremely low, said Dr. Steven Sundloff, director of the FDA's Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. They should not be changing the diet. If they've been feeding a particular product, they should continue to feed that product. That's in the best interest of the baby. Really? If they've been... Nick?
Insanity.
If you've been feeding your baby motor oil, please continue to feed your baby motor oil. Don't be flopping around between 10W30 and 10W40 or 5W50. Stay on one motor. That's the important thing.
You'll be messing with the chemical makeup which you've installed in your child.
You have trifled with the laws of the universe. Now that's the thing. If you're a regular listener to this program, you know we were talking about the infant formula thing, what, 3 months ago? Four? Because I started, and what did I say? I said, oh, yeah. Oh, no, they said, oh, there's not in the American supply. No. And then I called the 800 number on the back of the can, because we got two babies on bottles in the house. And they said, oh, well, it's all produced in China. Enfamil, Similac, Carnation, all these brands. This is a nation that can no longer produce its own baby formula. Just let that sink in. We cannot produce our own baby formula. And, you know, it's not because we forgot how. It's because, thanks to the Bush administration and its rewards program for frequent fleer corporatists, some bean counter, the chief financial officer, our year-end bonuses and our stocks will be much higher if we move it to China and make our baby formula out of poisoned milk. That's the kind of cost-benefit analysis corporate America engages in every day. Oh, well, you know, talking about Detroit, it's the Ford Pinto thing all over again. Remember, Ford did a cost-benefit analysis and determined that the amount of money they would pay for people who got killed in those hateful, awful, crappy little Pintos, that it would be cheaper for them to let people die than it would be to modify their design and their manufacturing process. They made that decision. It was proven at trial. Well, this is the same thing. The FDA cannot identify. They can't identify a safe exposure level for melamine. That basically means that the only way that melamine is safe for you is if you are not taking it into the human body. At least 3 babies in China are dead. 50,000 others have been made ill. It does things like burn up kidneys, that kind of stuff. The Associated Press went out and filed a Freedom of Information Act request, and the FDA... while they didn't want to say anything about it, acknowledged that they had detected melamine in a sample of one popular formula and the presence of, this is yummy, cyanuric acid, a chemical relative of melamine, in the formula of a second manufacturer. Then a third formula manufacturer told the Associated Press that in-house tests had detected trace levels of melamine in its infant formula. Who are these? Well, it's Abbott Laboratories, Nestle, and Mead Johnson. They make 90% of all the infant formula produced in the United States. Wait a minute. What the heck does that sentence mean? Manufacture more than 90% of all infant formula produced in the United States. Well, how is it produced in the United States if it's got poison Chinese milk product in it? Interesting question, isn't it? The FDA and other experts said that the melamine contamination in U.S.-made formula had occurred during the manufacturing process rather than intentionally. Well, we didn't mean to poison your baby! You know, you go to law school, and I do still remember some of this. You go to law school, and on the first day of 1L in the first semester, you go to torts class, and usually you've got a professor standing at the front of the room who says, here is your first lesson. All liability is based on fault. And there's some old English case that involved a couple of the king's sword men who were practicing at their sword fighting skills in merry old England. And one of them whacked the dickens out of the other and grievously injured him. And the injured guy sued. And the defense put forward by the guy who did the whacking was, blimey, I didn't mean to. And the court said, whether you meant to or not, you did. And so your intent is not going to determine your culpability. Your fault is going to determine your culpability. All liability is based on fault. Did God come down, take the sword out of your hands, and whack the other guy? No, you whacked the other guy. You've acknowledged whacking the other guy. It is your fault. And yet you've got some bush flunky at the FDA who's, wow, you know, wasn't done we're not intentionally trying to poison the children. We're just negligently poisoning the children. It's like Don Blankenship saying, well, you know, we don't mean for coal to cause a 10-point IQ drop in every child born in America because of the mercury that gets into women's systems and stays resident there. We don't mean for that to happen, so we're not liable. It doesn't work that way. So if you've got little ones or know someone with little ones, I don't care what the FDA says, you might want to look at some other feeding strategy than pumping poison into a wee tiny baby.
It was a whole new meaning to formula.
Right, yeah, exactly. Cyanuric acid? I mean, sure, I understand. There's fancy words. Aspirin is salicylic acid or something like that? I don't know. And vinegar is a form of acid, of course. But cyanuric acid? That just can't be good for you. But welcome to what 8 years, you know, this goes back to what Bob said and what Juanita said. Well, welcome to having a chance. Welcome to having a little, just a little, letting open that safe, secure little place where you've kept what's left of your hope and letting a little sunshine into it. Because we have a chance. We have a fighting chance. That's all. But it is, for what it is, still exponentially greater than anything we have had for the last 8 years when the corporate killers had the bit in their teeth and were running till there was a sweaty lather on them, running to take American jobs overseas, running to destroy what was left of the middle class, running to pauperize this nation. Because see, if they'd gotten away with it, and they may yet, then the whole thing is to, you know, then the jobs will come back here and we will work for slave wages, and all the gains that labor has made for the last 100 years will be erased. Have we heard yet who Obama's Secretary of Labor is going to be? I went looking for it, and I didn't see it. So, like I said, do what you got to do as far as your little ones are concerned. And frankly, you know, if you want to trust the Bush administration FDA, you go right ahead. But we're going to have a little sit down here, and we're going to talk about this. And, you know, they say the milk-based is safer than the non-milk-based. It's all manufactured in a place that has no quality control whatsoever. Yeah, acetylsalicylic acid. Thank you, Lottie. So that's, you know, that's the horns of a damn difficult dilemma. What do you do?
Sounds like it's time to start mashing your own peas and carrots to me, Bob.
Well, but you got to get them to the point where the peas and carrots.
That's true.
You know, the people who have been advocating breastfeeding all these years, turns out maybe they were right. You know what I mean? So it's worth your consideration. Now, as we move toward the end of the program this evening, just a couple of things to throw out there for your consideration. Did you see this story? It hit, yesterday. It turns out that the Bush administration was spying on Tony Blair. Now, we have an agreement. The United States and the United Kingdom have an agreement. They say that they won't collect on each other. They won't spy on each other. And it is an agreement of long standing. And George Bush felt he needed to know what Tony Blair was. What the? And this all comes from former Navy Arab linguist David Murphy Falk, who says that, you know, we talked about this a couple of months back, too, that he and his co-workers listened in on hundreds of Americans over the years. The ABC story says another intercept operator, former Navy Arab linguist David Murphy Falk, 39 years old, said he and his fellow intercept operators listened in to hundreds of Americans picked up using phones in Baghdad's Green Zone from late 2003 to November 2007. Calling home to the United States, talking to their spouses, sometimes their girlfriends, sometimes one phone call following another, said Falk. That's just ordinary Americans. But Falk is also claiming that U.S. intelligence actively spied on the private lives of both Tony Blair and Iraq's first interim president, a man by the name of Ghazi al-Yawar. The Bush administration kept a file on Blair's private life and heard pillow talk phone calls of al-Yawar. Can you imagine? Of course you can imagine. Are you disgusted? Or are you just numbed after 8 miserable years? Are you just numbed? One former CIA official said, if it is true that we maintained a file on Blair, it would represent a huge breach of the agreement we have with the Brits. Of course, we know now that George Bush was the source of the leak on Valerie Plame. And we know now that they spied on the people that were supposedly our allies. And why we did not remove that evil little man from office, I will never know. And history will rightly condemn the people who refused to do so as having not only coddled but suborned these criminal enterprises. No, we're not surprised. And yeah, I guess I am kind of numb to it. But it gives me another one of those moments to say, dear God, they can't be gone soon enough. And, you know, I'm trying to find what the spin would be on this. I'm not into spin, but I'm just trying to think of how, you know, because I try to think inside Wingnut Skull once in a while. Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Admiral Michael Mullen has done something rather extraordinary. And I can't help but, even if they came to the idea a little bit late, I can't help but applaud them for the decision. These folks, Admiral and Mrs. Mullen, are known for a fabulous holiday soiree. Last year, the soiree featured Kid Rock. Well, the taste isn't everything, I suppose.
The American Badass?
The guy who samples the Sweet Home Alabama and Werewolves of London in the same song and calls it something new. You know, we were smoking funny things, we were trying different things. A guy who rhymes the word things with the word things. Man, you can't beat that kind of talent. But anyway, it was a big do, and it was something to look forward to. And folks said that they'd already sent out their invitations. And then they sent out another notice. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Mrs. Michael G. Mullen wish to inform you that in these trying financial times, they have decided to forego their holiday reception this year. Instead, they will host a small gathering for wounded service members, their families, and the families of the fallen. Therefore, please disregard your December 7th holiday reception invitation. We sincerely regret any inconvenience and greatly appreciate your understanding. All the best for a joyous holiday season. And I put to you a question. Would they have done that if this was last Christmas and Bush still had another year to go? No, don't think so. So maybe this is the kind of difference that you see when people do have hope and have some notion that maybe some sense of morality may be re-entering the picture. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
This is Alan. How you doing?
Hey, Alan. How are you? Yeah. Alan, the former trucker.
Yeah. I finally got back to work after losing about half my retirement on the stock market.
Ouch.
I'm driving a Sprinter van instead of a tractor-trailer truck.
Oh, so you are Alan the trucker again then?
I guess so. Or the van driver. Yeah, not a big truck. I think I like this a lot better. I can find a place to park at night.
Yeah, it's got to be a little less nerve-wracking.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to tell you that I listened to Democracy Now, today's show, and there are people on there saying that Obama is picking people who are really conservatives on some of these appointments.
Yes.
Have you heard about that?
That's causing a great deal of unrest and misgiving. And I got a story in my inbox during the show this evening, Alan, indicating that it's quite possible that Robert Gates, Bush's Secretary of Defense, may well stay in place.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just too yucky to consider. Of course, there was some good news today, too, insofar as John Brennan withdrew his name for consideration as director of the CIA. And that's a good thing, because John Brennan was a guy who thought that torture was just keen.
Oh, that's good that he didn't accept that.
Yeah.
I guess this issue goes to prove that that people on the left should not just give up and just say Obama's in the White House, everything's okay. Time to just keep on supporting your organizations like Head On Radio Network.
Well, that's the thing. The work is not done. The work is not completed, and we've got to stay on top of it. So you're absolutely right, Alan.
Yep. I think that's what they, that's one of the reasons why FDR was so successful, is because people under him just kept prodding them on to do the things that are good for the people instead of the purple.
Well, I hope to goodness we do, and I know some people get frustrated with the criticisms that are out there. And, oh, my goodness, he's not even in office yet. But we have a moral, ethical responsibility to not roll over and play dead like the conservatives do when they have power. You know, we're liberals for a reason. We have consciences. They don't. And so as a consequence, you know, we've really got to stay on top of the situation.
Yeah, that's right. And we start borrowing more money, we've got to make sure that money is spent in a way that would bring back a profit in the future.
And, well, and benefit, yeah,
the bombs.
And benefit the people of the United States.
I know it.
That's, and so I think, you know, we stay with the organizations, that we stay with our advocacy groups, and we keep doing our work. That's all we can do. Alan, I've run out of time, but good to hear from you, brother, and I hope we'll be hearing from you more now that you're back out on the road, and I'm sorry you had to go there, but good to hear from you.
Yeah, okay. Well, nice hearing you again.
All right, you take care, Alan.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Alan, the trucker. Didn't say where he was. I should have asked. Shame on me. So that's the program for this evening. And thank you for all you do to participate. Thank you for your chat room participation, your emails, your phone calls, downloading, podcasting. I've got an email from our buddy Tom out in California for tomorrow evening. A little electric car update that I think you'll find interesting. And please, if you have time tomorrow or whenever it is you hear this program, dial 1-888-438-2731. And please insist that the governor of the state of West Virginia start acting like a governor for all West Virginians and not just a governor for the corporations that are literally sucking the life out of this state. Ask Joe Manchin to help save Coal River Mountain with the power he already has. Please. Also, if you have not contributed to the Horn or are a listener but not a contributor, we would greatly appreciate you joining the efforts of so many other people to keep this operation going. As I have said, the holiday season and the political season have wreaked havoc, and it's not just us, it's other organizations too, but have wreaked havoc on our ability to keep this going. And I would not say that things were as dire as they are if they were not as dire as they are. And we need help. We need you. Because otherwise, I mean, I'm not saying when or God's going to call me home or anything like that, but we can't make bricks without straw. So, if you haven't, please do. We'll all be back. Guy, James, Mark Levine, and I will be back tomorrow evening. I hope you'll be there then, and I hope you will be ready to offer whatever it is that is on your mind at the time. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. This is one of those urgent moments when standing up really, really makes you feel, makes you know you're doing the right thing.